from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Many shoppers are willing to shell out more money for organic produce because they believe it is healthier, but a new report casts doubt on that. The Stanford University study challenges whether organic foods are more nutritious than conventional foods grown with pesticides. We'll discuss the health benefits of organic foods and the impact of ingesting trace amounts of pesticides. Do you buy organic? And will this new study change the way you eat? Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Even though, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, organic food accounts for only 4.2% of retail food sales, between 1997 and 2011, organic foods, which are more expensive than conventional food, increased in total sales from $3.6 billion to $24.4 billion. And in many instances, the escalating amount of organic food sales had to do with the perception of organic food as being healthier and more nutritious. Now, a Stanford-based study published this past Monday in the Annals of Internal Medicine concludes that there is little evidence of nutritional benefits from organic foods. And in this forum hour, we take up the ongoing debate over the health and safety of organic foods. And joining us in studio is Crystal Smith-Spangler. She's a physician and researcher at Stanford. Stanford School of Medicine, also Virginia Palo Alto Healthcare System, put together this study. She's co-authored the study with Veterans Administration in Palo Alto, and is co-author with Professor Dina Bravada. And welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Well, I guess the results of the study say not only is it not necessarily more nutritious organic food than conventional food, doesn't carry more health risks either.
Well, we had two or three key findings. Our first key finding was that we did not find strong evidence of that organic foods are consistently more nutritious than conventional foods. I think our second key finding is that organic produce was a 30% lower risk of contamination with any detectable pesticide residues compared with conventional produce. However, we also found that differences in the risk of exceeding maximum allowed limits for pesticide residues may be small.
And you went through thousands of papers. This is what's called a meta-study, really.
Yeah, this is a meta-analysis. So we examined the literature. We examined almost 6,000 studies. We identified 223 studies of foods, comparing organic and conventional foods, and 17 studies of humans consuming organic versus conventional foods.
Let's talk a little bit more about what you discovered. You mentioned those three highlights, but there was also some data about phosphorus being higher in organic grown produce, which really has little clinical significance.
Sure.
Also, organic milk has higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids. That's important.
Sure. We did find weak evidence of differences in fatty acid content in milk and chicken with significantly higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids in organic milk and chicken. However, only a few studies examined these outcomes, 3 to 5 studies in each case, and results varied greatly.
This is, I mean, not a lot of evidence.
As sure, yeah.
I mean, I'm not necessarily trying to sound terribly critical here, but it's, some would like to see a lot more evidence, and you could, I suppose, take the evidence and tip it the other way, couldn't you?
Well, I think for produce, we have a lot of evidence. There's been a lot of research on nutrient levels in produce. There's been far fewer research on nutrient levels in animal products. I'd also like to note that in 4 of the studies that examined the fatty acids, they also noted that the brand of milk and the season of harvest affected fatty acid levels at least as much as farming methods. So, in other words, there are a lot of factors that govern nutrient levels. So it's not surprising that we found a lot of variability.
You also are not making any recommendations here as far as what's superior or what people ought to opt for.
No, we're not making any recommendations. The whole goal of the study was really to provide the information about what the evidence is and what's been published in the literature to support the evidence.
There was a blog put out by Michael Pollan on your study after doing some analysis of it, and he said there's not real new research here, and he called it kind of a straw man. He said no one says there are nutritional benefits to eating organic food, that really what we should be looking at is how the food is grown, how environmentally sustainable it is, you know, sort of characteristic Michael Pollan takes on this. But he also said that you could almost have completely opposite, antithetical conclusions, even with the same data. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think, you know, when we looked at the data, we found that, you know, we found differences that would kind of support the consumption of organic food, and we also found differences that support the consumption of conventional food. So we really just wanted to put out the evidence so that people could make an informed decision. And I think Michael Pollan brings up a good point. Nutritional concerns or concerns about pesticides are not the only reasons why people choose to consume organic food. I mean, we just focused on these two aspects because this is already a large study to begin with. But people can choose organic food for preferences in taste, concerns about the environment, animal welfare, farm worker health, or they may be concerned about cost.
But you do say there's more pesticide residue in conventional food.
Yes. So
it's about 30% to 7%?
So there's a 30% lower risk of contamination with any detectable pesticide residues in organic compared to conventional food. So that's any detectable levels.
But these are not levels that are, at least according to FDA, to be concerned about.
Correct. So in general, it was uncommon among both organic and conventional foods to have contamination that exceeded maximum allowed limits.
Again, we're talking to Crystal Smith Spangler, physician, researcher at Stanford and at Stanford School of Medicine, who along with the Veterans Administration, Palo Alto Healthcare System, have published a study on organic foods with Professor Dina Bravada being the co-author with Crystal Smith Spangler. Let me get a couple of other voices in here. Well, on different sides of this issue, Charles Benbrook is presently a professor of agriculture at Washington State University. He has done technical review of the Stanford study. We ought to mention he was chief science consultant for the Organic Center, which is an Oregon-based research center focusing on converting agriculture to organic methods and promoting awareness and demand for organic products. And Charles Benbrook, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the chance to visit some about this study.
Well, let me just introduce the next guest, and then I'll go back to you, if you don't mind. The other guest who's with us is Bruce Ames, who is professor emeritus in biochemistry at UC Berkeley and senior scientist at the Children's Hospital of Oakland Research Institute, and who has been on forum in the past talking about, Bruce, I'm trying to phrase this as elegantly as I can, about organic foods not being worth the extra money that's paid for them. I think that's your position, isn't it?
Well, if you can afford it and they taste better, but my passion is preventing disease, and the way you do that is to eat a better diet. And as far as I'm concerned, these tiny, tiny traces of pesticide residues are irrelevant.
Let me get back to you, because Charles Benbrook actually wanted to respond to what he heard from Dr. Smith Spangler. And let me go to you, Charles Benbrook.
Thank you. By virtue of my job the last 10 years, I've actually read most of the studies, the 298 studies referenced in this the new Stanford work, and whenever you try to extract whatever insights are to be had in a large body of science that covers pesticides and nutrients and antibiotics and bacterial contamination of food, it's very difficult, and you never can really fully capture what insights and information are to be had in using a meta-analysis approach. The metrics that the Stanford team used to quantify the differences between organic and conventional food reported in a variety of studies, whether they looked at the prevalence of antibiotic-resistant bacteria in conventional and organic food, or the omega fatty acid profiles in organic dairy products versus conventional, or the pesticide residue differences. They used an unusual statistic that really underestimates the difference. And if you recalculate, for example, the different prevalence of pesticide residues in organic foods versus conventional foods in the studies that the Stanford team looked at, the way most people would calculate that difference, it's about 80 or 81% difference between the prevalence rates. But the odd risk difference indicator that the team used.
I guess
used,
I would disagree. That's an absolute risk difference, which is a standard way to report risks in epidemiologic data. And actually, it's kind of best practices in to not over-exaggerate risks by using relative risk differences. This is especially important when risks and prevalence of those risks are uncommon. So I would strongly disagree that an absolute risk difference is an unfair metric.
Well, let's put the methodology aside. I know that Charles Benberg has some real concerns about the methodology that he's already expressed, and you would defend it. But you have other concerns about and I want to go to those, if I may, Charles Benberg, about the pesticide differences not being trivial and, in fact, ignoring science that seems to support concern where women and of childbearing age are concerned in pesticides.
Right. Just in the last few years, there have been a series of studies published predominantly in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives that clearly document a correlation between levels of organophosphate insecticide metabolites in the blood and umbilical cords of pregnant women with both the frequency of neurological-based birth defects at birth and then the development of the children and levels of both motor skills and IQ. The groups of women in three different studies, two carried out on the East Coast and the third in a population of pregnant women in Watsonville that were involved with agricultural production, mostly farm worker families. The levels of the metabolites in these women's bodies at the birth of their children actually are on average about at the same level as the most heavily exposed 25% of American women of childbearing age. And these exposures in the general population are coming predominantly from the residues of these insecticides in fresh fruits and vegetables. And I think that at this point, the evidence is quite compelling that even very low levels of exposure at critical points in fetal development can trigger through epigenetic mechanisms changes in the child's development that sometimes can lead to adverse lifelong health consequences.
Let me get Bruce Ames to comment on that. Bruce Ames?
Yeah, I was very unconvinced that epidemiology is fiendishly difficult. The epidemiologist joke is Miami's a weird place. Everybody's born Hispanic and dies Jewish. That's called confounding. And you can do a study over and over again in Miami, you get the same answer, but you're drawing the wrong conclusion. So half the time, epidemiologists get the wrong answer because it's so difficult. We're mechanism people. We want more evidence before you believe that kind of thing.
And you're in agreement with this with the Stanford study?
I mean, I thought it was a beautiful study. And they pointed out there's this huge variability from one crop to one batch of carrots to another batch of carrots, or one batch of broccoli to another. It depends on the weather and the soil and all these things. So to really show that nutrition is better in organic, you'd have to do huge numbers of samples. And so basically, it's really hard to prove the difference. And if you cherry pick, which unfortunately I think some of the Benbrook studies do, then you can get any answer you want. And Dr. Smith Spangler pointed that out. So you have to be really careful on this, and I think the Stanford people did a good job.
There is a sense, in fact, Charles Benbrook, that organic food has become a big business, of course, and the idea that it's more healthy was a way of making the sales escalate, which they did, as I said in my introduction. Organic labeling, I believe, was instituted as a marketing device by the USDA, nothing to do with nutritional value or safety. Is that not correct?
Well, the original organic rule that was promulgated by USDA in 2002 was really put in place to try to bring about some harmonization across about three dozen organic certifying agents that were working across the United States, and often not with the same standards. So it became kind of a difficult and at times sloppy affair in trying to label and market organic food when there were, 25 or 30 different sets of standards. So the Congress deemed it appropriate, in the 1990 Farm Bill to, pass the legislation that ultimately led to the National Organic Program rule, and I think it's definitely been helpful in that the same basic scientific standards now govern the design of organic farming systems and also the labeling of food in terms of the content of organic food in it. But to respond to Dr. Ames claiming that I cherry pick studies, I have reviewed and used in a similar meta-analysis most of the same studies that the Stanford team did, and I totally agree with them and with Dr. Ames that there are many factors that can drive up or down the nutrient levels in a given carrot, tomato, pineapple, or strawberry, and that there is no guarantee in terms of a farming system or genetics that all the time you're going to have higher nutrient levels in a given carrot compared to other carrots. But what the literature shows, and all the literature that's valid, not a cherry-picked set of it, is that on average about 60% of the time, the nutrient levels, or several nutrient levels, are in fact 10 to 25% higher in the organic food. In about 30% of the time, there's no difference, and in approximately 10% of the time, they're higher in the conventional samples that are tested in a properly designed comparison study.
So could I get Dr. Ames to respond to those figures, Bruce Ames?
So the rules on pesticide residues are incredibly conservative. So you find a tiny trace of pesticide, but there's no toxicological reason for thinking that's going to have any interest. The really big risk is eating a bad diet. Obesity, which is due to eating poor diets, is linked to every possible dysfunction that's been looked at. Your brain goes out, you get more heart disease, more cancer, you name it. And what we're showing is if you don't get your 30 vitamins and minerals, then it ages you faster in some way. So when you get a little low in any vitamin and mineral, the body has built in a system for rationing. So the proteins that need that vitamin for survival and reproduction hang on to it, and all the ones preventing your DNA damage, or preventing heart disease, or preventing cancer, all these things, they lose it. So if you don't eat the perfect diet, you're getting all this insidious damage that leads to some disease of aging.
Well, let's concentrate on vitamins perhaps more than the differences between organic and conventional food. But I want to go to the heart of something else here, and that is there have been a lot of food outbreaks around organic food. And I think you've pointed out, Bruce Ames, that there are dangers in the way, poor sterilization of manure leading to E. coli. I mean, are we talking in any real sense as far as antibiotics or health about a major or dramatic differences on either side?
Well, I wouldn't worry about food. Is amazingly safe now compared to what it was in the old days. But this last big food epidemic in Germany, where close to 50 people died and thousands were really sick, it was in some organic seeds. And my impression, though I haven't looked into this, is that given the small percentage of organic, more of these scares are coming up in organic farms. So, again, I don't think that's something to really worry the public about. The thing they should be worrying about is not smoking and eating more fruits and vegetables. Those really help to prevent cancer, to eat a balanced diet and get your omega-3s, all the things your mom told you.
And are you not concerned about pesticide residues, say, for pregnant women or babies or vulnerable?
Now, the main thing for pregnant women is eat a good, balanced diet. You don't get your folic acid, which is one of the vitamins. You break your chromosomes, just like radiation. And we were talking about half the poor were breaking their chromosomes because they weren't getting enough folic acid. So the things that are important are the things you're leaving out of your diet, because then you foul up your metabolism. We're full of defense systems, and you can disable a lot of them if you don't eat a perfect diet.
It's Bruce Ames, again, is Professor Emeritus of Biochemistry at UC Berkeley and Senior Scientist at Children's Hospital, Oakland Research Institute. Let me open the phone lines and invite you to join this conversation. And if you have questions or comments, you're welcome to do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your phone calls. And again, you can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, or by going to our Facebook page. We're talking again with Bruce Ames as well as Charles Benbrook, who is now professor of agriculture at Washington State. And we also have on the here in studio Crystal Smith-Spangler, physician and researcher at Stanford's School of Medicine and the Veterans Affairs Palo Alto Healthcare System, co-author of the study that we're talking about. Again, we certainly welcome your involvement in the discussion. Let me look, in fact, at some of the emails that are coming in. Heather writes, the thing about this article is that it only looks at how food affects those consuming it. I get so tired of this navel-gazing, all about me attitude. Where organic needs more messaging, in my opinion, is about how it affects the environment, such as runoff, dead zones in oceans, contaminated drinking water, diseased wetlands, etc. What pesticide and chemical fertilizer ruin are basically all the filtering systems in our environment. That cannot lead to good health in anyone. And also, how it affects those that touch the food every day, such as farm workers, wholesale and retail produce workers, not to mention the higher incidence of Parkinson's, brain tumors, and asthma in rural farm communities. You would say what to that, Dr. Smith-Spangler?
Well, I'd say we mentioned that in our study and in all my conversations in the press. There are many reasons why people choose to consume organic food. And this is the question that some of my patients and family members and friends ask me about the nutrition and the risks of consuming the food. So this is why we limited our study to this. It was already a huge study. So I think the commenter has a valid point that there are other reasons why people choose organic.
Well, let me ask you to respond to another comment from Dave, who says, because studying vegetables side by side in a lab is barely the tip of the iceberg, let us agree, he spells L-U-T-T-U-C-E, the premise of the study is deceptively narrow. To truly compare the benefits of organic produce, a phrase such as more nutritious should really encompass issues such as the effects of herbicides and pesticides on groundwater, the health of the bees and the other insects that pollinate the crops, replenishment of the soil in which they grow, long-term sustainability of plant species due to crop biodiversity, preservation of a domestic small-scale agricultural economy, to name just a few. You get the picture here.
Yes.
I mean, the study had its limitations, but he says it's unfortunate what will be ignored in most of the inevitable anti-organic media coverage of the tiny scope of this study, namely the complexity resulting from billions of years of evolution, or at least tens of thousands of years of human agriculture. Point well taken. Yeah.
Can I
put Bruce Ames, yes.
Point about the big picture? Plants can't run away. So all plant evolution is chemical warfare. Every plant, whether it's broccoli or carrots, is filled with 100 toxic chemicals to kill you and to kill all the insects and everybody that are munching on it, except for berries, which are designed to be spread by animals. And we pointed out that 99.99% of the pesticides you eat are nature's pesticides. Well, if you test all these weird chemicals in plants, you get the exact same hit rate as testing synthetic chemicals. Half of them come out as causing cancer in mice or rats, and they're mutagens galore. So people are losing sight of the big picture. And doesn't mean that drinking a cup of espresso is going to do you in, but they're more carcinogenic in a cup of espresso than you get in pesticide residues in a year.
Well,
I have an Italian wife, so I drink my espresso every morning.
Yeah, and your espresso does well for you. I've seen you dance with your Italian wife, and the two of you should be doing some ballroom dancing, maybe on television. You're that good. We're going to come back and talk more with Bruce Ames, with Charles Benbrook, with Crystal Smith-Spangler, and with you as we continue to explore, well, the study that's out of Stanford and conventional food versus organic food. Where do you come down? This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Many shoppers are willing to well, shell out more money for organic produce because they believe it's healthier or more nutritious. A new report casts doubt on that. The Stanford University study challenges whether organic foods are more nutritious than conventional foods grown with pesticides. And we're talking about the health benefits of organic foods and the impact of ingesting trace amounts of pesticides and asking the question, do you buy organic and will this new study change the way you eat? And we asked on the Facebook page if the study would have an impact on buying habits, and Sandra writes, the reason I eat organic is to avoid pesticides. This confirms my preferences. Joyce adds, eating organic apart from flavor and avoiding pesticide exposure is a political act. Corporations are trying to patent and control the fundamental sources of our food. It's not only immoral in my view, but dangerous. We're allowing private interests to control the ultimate personal and public good, our food. And Debbie writes, they didn't deal with the primary issue for me, taste. My experience is that organic produce tastes better. Some emails to read. Diane says, I've gardened and eaten organic food for 40 years, never thinking that it was more nutritious, just that it was more delicious. Another listener, Angela, says, growing, buying, and eating organic food is not only about the health of the individual, it is about the health of the environment, the health of the people growing our food, sustainability. It may not be that food from industrial or large-scale organic production does not show the same individual health benefits to what is grown on a smaller scale because of different practices. As a single example, use of compost versus liquid fertilizers for soil fertility. All organic is not created equal, but it is still a better choice, and this study is no excuse to go back to poison-sprayed food. Ron in Mountain View says, I'm a fan of organic food, but I don't think it is more nutritious, but rather less poisonous. Does this report confirm that organic food is less poisonous? That's my bottom line. And you say what, Dr. Smith-Spangler?
Well, I'd say consumption of organic food, you have a 30% lower risk of contamination with any detectable pesticide residues. But when we looked at the risk of exceeding maximum allowed limits, they were small in both groups. So I guess it's your, if you feel that the maximum allowed limits are not acceptable, are not safe in the U.S., then you could conclude that. But we've got another expert here on the line who has already talked about that.
Well, I've also got a number of people who are asking who is funding your study. Michael says, I find the study to be sensationalist. The findings are overstated, actually not focused on the main factors that the organic movement is founded on. The time since the onset of organic movement is too short to see a long-term health impact. The focus on health and organic is spurious. The focus on organic is due to environmental health and sustainability. Health impacts would be systemic, not direct. And I'd like to know who's funding the labs.
For all the studies that were included, as there were over 200 studies included. That varied greatly. Our study was not funded by, we did not receive a grant or a contract to do this work. I was a trainee when we started this work. So this is a largely unfunded study. We were physicians, we were primary care doctors, and our patients, our families and friends ask us these questions, so we were curious.
And again, Crystal Smith-Sangler is co-author of the study, which appears in the new issue of the Annals of Internal Medicine, done by Stanford School of Medicine and the Veterans Affairs Palo Alto Healthcare System. We also have Charles Benbrook with us, chief science consultant formerly with the Organic Center and now professor of agriculture at Washington State, and Bruce Ames, professor emeritus of biochemistry at UC Berkeley and senior scientist at Children's Hospital of the Oakland Research Institute. Let's go to your calls. Philip, you're on.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I do eat organic when I can afford it. It's kind of expensive. And the reason I do is that it's an established principle. I mean, regardless of which side is talking in this debate, it's an established principle. It's not controversial that small amounts of toxins over ingested over a long period of time can and does cause cancer in a particular portion of the population. And so that's my primary concern. And one group may say it's a greater chance. One group will say it's a smaller chance. But the question I have to ask myself is, am I willing to take the chance? And I'm not willing to, because that really is not a controversial principle. The overwhelming evidence shows that toxins do and can and do cause cancer in a particular portion of the population.
Is that of concern to you, Charles Benbrook? The cancer cause of toxins of this sort or carcinogens?
Yeah, you know, the average conventional soft skin fruit and vegetable, you know, in the U.S. market contains, three to four different pesticide residues. And for a significant percentage, there's eight or more different residues. Conventional agriculture has become, you know, very chemical intensive, and so many people are being exposed to four or five or six different residues a day. And while I totally agree with Dr. Ames and the Stanford team that the most important single change or intervention a person can make in their diet to promote health is to eat an ample number of servings of fresh, ripe fruits and vegetables. I do feel that in the last few years, the science base has become very convincing in terms of the potential of very low levels, well below tolerances, leading to significant risk among a certain portion of the population. And, there are measures of these risks. There are papers that have quantified pesticide risk, not the number of pesticide residues which appear in food, which is the metric that the Stanford team pointed out. I think Dr. Ames and I would be in 100% agreement that the number of residues in a sample of food really doesn't have much to do with risk. It depends on the toxicity of the chemical and the level that the residues are present at. So, I read the science differently. I've spent a lot of time studying the dietary risk assessment methods and policies of the EPA. All of my work on dietary risk is grounded in government data and well-accepted principles, and I think we have some work left to do in driving down even further than we have in the last decade the levels of many of the more toxic pesticides, which are, and most of those are insecticides.
Can I get you to respond, Bruce Ames?
Well, the regulations are so conservative. We're talking about real trivia here. Now, if you're trying to prevent cancer, which I'm passionate about, you have to concentrate on the big risks, and having 100 minor hypothetical risks out there just confuses everybody. And that's exactly what all this fuss about little traces of pesticides are doing. If they're really tiny, it doesn't make any toxicological sense. And the thing that's doing you in is when you eat a bad diet. That's what's doing you in. You're making damage in your own body, and nature can't do anything about it. But our liver and all our defenses are incredibly good because we're living in a sea of toxic chemicals from plants. You get an oxidizing agent into you. Those are mutagenic, as is radiation. And you induce antioxidant defenses. 250 enzymes go up to protect you. That's how animals survive eating plants that are full of toxins. And they're general toxins. Plus, you shed any part of your body that's exposed to the outside world, like your gut lining and your skin. You shed the cells that get exposed to the outside world every day. We're very well defended. So these tiny, tiny traces are really irrelevant. The thing to do is eat a balanced diet and don't smoke. And every year, life expectancy gets longer. All these scare stories about traces of tiny traces of chemicals causing cancer have all been debunked. All the people in the field who research those kinds of things think the big risks to your health are things you can do something about.
Yeah, let's not forget exercise in this.
exercise is good for you. Eating more fruits and vegetables and eating a good balanced diet so you eat more greens. Americans aren't getting greens, so they don't get the magnesium, which is involved with DNA repair systems. They don't get their vitamin K, which prevents you getting cancer. They don't get folic acid. Folia is a Latin word for leaf, which prevents chromosome breaks. I mean, we have to focus on the big things, and the poor aren't eating enough fruits and vegetables, and making them more expensive is just they'll just eat less. When you raise the price of fruits and vegetables, people eat less of them.
And you mentioned the poor. I'm also struck by the fact that if we're talking about feeding the world, you might want to comment on this, Dr. Smith-Spangler. I mean, how sustainable is organic food as opposed to conventional food?
Oh, we couldn't feed the population of the world.
It's a key question, it seems to me. Yeah.
And I think we'd do a disservice to our listeners and our readers if, you know, we came out and said that we exaggerated the risks and that caused people to consume less fruits and vegetables. I think that would be the real disservice here.
Well, let me get Charles Benbrook on this. Professor Benbrook?
Well, you know, again, I agree about the importance of eating more fruits and vegetables, but Dr. Ames overstates the degree of consensus in the cancer community. The latest cancer panel report put out by a panel of cancer specialists appointed by during the Bush administration highlighted the importance not only of consuming a healthier diet and more fresh fruits and vegetables, but also seeking out when affordable for people organic food as a way to further increase the odds that a person is has the best shot at a long and healthy life. So I'm quite aware and very pleased that the EPA pesticide regulation over the last 20 years has in fact driven down significantly the exposure to proven carcinogens, and we've made a great deal of progress on that front. But the kinds of risks that science now is pointing to are more associated with exposures during periods of high vulnerability, and particularly during pregnancy and in the first few years of life. And they involve what's called epigenetic changes. It's sort of changes in the way the body grows and puts together the organ systems that support our health throughout life. And I don't think we certainly don't have all the answers, but the literature to me is quite clear that these are risk factors that we know enough about and certainly have the tools to reduce.
Let me bring on some more of our callers. I've been waiting patiently here. Syed, thank you for waiting. Join us.
Yeah, hi. The question that I had is, are all organic food the same? In other words, are there any standards for foods to be labeled organic? I often go to the grocery store. I see 5 to 6 different kinds of milk brands that are all labeled organic, and I wonder if they're the same or if there's any difference.
Good question. All organic dairy farmers that sell milk with the USDA certified organic seal have to comply with a very lengthy technical set of standards that govern how the health of the animal must be protected, how the animals are fed and housed, and also what can be done to the milk and the dairy products after they've been shipped from the farm. The biggest difference embedded in the standards, the organic farming standards in the case of dairy, is that all cows on organic dairy farms have to consume at least 30% of their total diet or dry matter intake from grass, growing grass in pastures during the predominant growing season in any region of the country, which of course would be longer in California, where weather conditions support pasture growth for a longer period of time. When cows consume a grass-based diet, they increase the concentration of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids in the milk, which have a wide array of health-promoting benefits, and it actually reduces the concentration of the so-called omega-6 fatty acids that are linked to higher risk for cardiovascular disease and diabetes and insulin resistance and many other health problems. So, there's very strong evidence in the literature that this shift in the omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acid profile in organic milk compared to conventional milk is significant enough to bring about an improvement in the overall balance in our diets between these different omega fatty acids, and that benefit is actually rooted in the National Organic Standard rules.
And let me, I'm sure Bruce Ames, you may want to respond to that, what we just heard, but I also want to ask you, since you were talking about plant toxins, the differences between plant toxins and pesticide toxins.
Well, they're an incredible variety of chemical structures in plants. They've been at it for billions of years to make chemicals that will kill off people. Animals that eat them or insects that eat them. And you can't generalize. In fact, most of our defenses tend to be general defenses. You get an oxidizing agent in you, you make antioxidant defenses. You get an alkylating agent that damages your DNA, you make anti-alkylating defenses. So we're humans are pretty well defended because we're living in this, as I say, 99.99% of the pesticides you eat are these weird chemicals in plants. And humans, of course, have bred plants, so they're less toxic. It isn't the kids used to get poisoned by going out to eat the shrubbery, but we've bred plants so that they're lower in these nasty things. And now with modern ways of plant breeding, though the organic farmers won't use them, we can make genetics much better. So practically everything you eat has been genetically modified.
Now, here's a listener who says, I just wanted to read this. Yes, organic is better. Let's have full transparency in our food labeling so we know whether we're getting organic, genetically modified food products, or some other food product. So as consumers, we can make an informed and safe choice for ourselves and our families. And another listener wants to know, what would explain the reason for my allergic reaction to conventionally grown strawberries and potatoes and not those that are organically grown? I'm still awaiting further studies with respect to pesticide residues. And no matter what the studies, I'm going to do my part to support small farmers who care for the land. I'll continue to buy organic despite the higher cost. Let me bring some more of your calls on here. And Lee, join us.
Michael, thank you so much for this show. I just want to point out, I just saw a thing on KQED Plus TV on Cesar Chavez. I grew up in Orange County next to strawberry fields. And there's a high incidence of Parkinson's disease, perhaps related to pesticides. But my last point, Michael, is how many Bruce Ameses through the last many decades have told us that DDT is safe, all these chemicals are safe, and yet we find out later, is this simply not the case? I'm part of the Master Gardeners of Santa Clara Valley. Each county has its Master Gardeners organization. They're all volunteer, and they promote everybody growing their own produce, which is a great idea. And if you live in an apartment, you can become part of a community garden. So those are my points, Michael, and thank you so much for another stellar show.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for the points. And Bruce Ames, would you like to respond?
DDT saved hundreds of millions of lives. The fellow who invented won a Nobel Prize. You don't want to go back on all that. DDT does bioconcentrate, and it was fine to phase it out, but the evidence that it really hurt people is practically non-existent. And you don't want to wipe out your birds, but the evidence that it did that is also wildly exaggerated. So, you know, the pesticides before the modern era were lead arsenate and copper and all sorts of nasty things that are natural, but cause cancer and stay in the ground forever. I mean, we're much better off than we were in the past. You're using much tinier levels of pesticides. Sometimes you use a gram per acre. They're making so, and we're all living longer. This idea that the modern world is doing us in is just wrong. Life expectancy gets longer. It doesn't make any sense on the toxicology. Nobody's shown that pesticides are causing Parkinson's. I think it's much more likely that bad diets are doing it. And we know that for obese people. That's what you shouldn't be doing, is getting fat, because the obese people are eating the worst diet in the country. They're starving for vitamins and minerals because they're eating mainly sugar. And so those are the important things.
Well, let me bring another caller. Alice, you're on forum. Welcome.
Is that Elise?
Oh, Elise, I'm sorry.
Hi. I'm a single mom in San Francisco and been the chair of the garden committee at my son's elementary school for quite a few years now. And we've sacrificed our entertainment budget for years to spend the extra money on eating organic. And I have to say, this week I've been just gravely disappointed at the mainstream news media verging on misinformation because of the way they're feeding us sound bites from the Stanford study. And while it may be academically rigorous, you know, those of us out here in the general population are not reading science journals for the details. And what we're being fed is you know, little clips of this study that are not giving us the real information. And I fall on the Michael Pollan side of this argument. And, you know, I eat organically for a number of reasons, for our personal health, but also for the environment. You know, I am concerned about the water runoff into the wetlands from the pesticide residues. I am concerned about the bee populations, which also affects the California economy. What about all our almond trees, which is one of the number one agricultural industries in the state of California? If the bee pollination doesn't work anymore, you know, almonds are not going to grow. All sorts of insect populations are affected by insecticides, and dairy and poultry, the hormones, the RSBT in the milk and yogurt and eggs that we eat that are affecting young women. We have elementary school children that are improperly developing these days because of all the hormones they're ingesting from young ages. There are great concerns about the toxicity that develops in us over years of ingesting these toxins.
Well, Elise, you've certainly cataloged those quite well for us, and I thank you. And it gets down to a basic question, if I may, Dr. Smith-Spangler, Crystal Smith-Spangler, co-author of this study. How much is the media really representing here of your study? I mean, you feel. I've got listeners, for example, who have sent emails. Carol says, the study has been manipulated to be sensational. Another listener, Paul, let me kind of dovetail these or congeal them, says many nutrients start to degrade immediately after harvest due to the action of enzymes, oxygen, and storage conditions. Unless these studies adjusted for the time between harvest and testing, I don't see how one can draw any conclusions regarding nutrient levels. A carrot harvested this morning, bought at the farmer's market and eaten tonight, is not likely to have the same nutrient values as one picked 2 weeks ago and shipped across the country to the supermarket. These are all telling points in terms of perhaps the limitations, once again, of your study.
Sure. Just to comment on the media response, this was a complex study. We looked at over 40 outcomes, and in every conversation we've had with the media, tried to emphasize the complexity of it. But it is very difficult to communicate this information to the public. And some of the headlines that I've seen have appeared to be a bit sensationalistic. They want you to click on the link and then read their article. And in terms
it's
of
also important to emphasize once again, you're not making recommendations with this study.
No, we're providing the information. I think my patients, my family, my friends want to know this type of information, and also recognize that the choice to consume organic is complex. There are many different factors that go into your choice. And just to make a comment, I would agree with one of the comments that you just read about there are many different factors that govern nutritional content, including ripeness. And so that is, when you purchase organic, you see the organic label and that you make your choice. You do not get information about the different practices used, and you don't get information about when it was harvested. So when you are, that really is the question that consumers are faced when they go to the market.
And we go to another of your calls. Catherine, join us. You're on forum. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm the president and co-founder of Silicon Valley 501c3 Viva Valley Initiative for Values in Urban Agriculture and Horticulture. And I want to talk about the soil health issues. The benefits of soil health biology to our food is not being addressed in the media and the Stanford research and in most California universities. To put soil perspective into perspective, in one handful of healthy soil, there are more live organisms than people in the world. Healthy soil will naturally eliminate the old pesticides and balance pH and thus make the soil nutrients available to our food. Unfortunately, we are not cleaning up our old soil pesticides, especially in our urban land and in agriculture, agribusiness land. This is a problem for the health of our food because pesticides kill soil health.
Well, let me just say, I alluded to earlier, Catherine, the fact that Michael Pollan blogged on this. And Michael Pollan's name is iconic to some and to others just the opposite. But he talks about the importance of healthy soils in this blog that he put out, which I believe is on our website. I think.
Yeah, no, he's the only, and also UC Santa Cruz deals with it as well.
So it's not as if it's getting no attention.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not getting attention, just not enough. But the best benefit of organic food is that it doesn't use chemicals, and that because it doesn't, it addresses the soil, improving the soil. And there is something called Beyond Organics, which is is really addressing the soil biology and making sure it's really, really quite rich. The research, the best research that's being done on this is out of state. It's Soil Food Web in Oregon and Rodale in Pennsylvania.
Well, let me thank you for your call. We're going to come to the end of this program, unfortunately, all too soon, because so much more to explore here. But in the little time remaining, Charles Benberg, I'd like to hear what your concerns are about this study being taken under advisement for people who might say, well, now maybe it isn't worth that extra expense to buy organic food.
Well, you know, I think that's how many people will spin it. The Stanford analysis really doesn't focus on our best and most technically sound measurements of risk, either in the area of pesticides or in antibiotics. The conclusions that they've drawn from their meta-analysis methods, I think, are not consistent with what many other scientists have concluded from reviewing the same literature. It is true that organic farming is no guarantee that every bag of carrots or apples or pint of strawberries is going to be more nutrient dense, but it is the best way to seek out the most nutrient dense on average over time. And certainly, fresh fruits and vegetables with the fewest pesticides and by far lower pesticide risk than associated with conventional crops.
All right, forgive me. With little time left, I'd like a final word from you, Bruce Ames, if I could.
Okay. So, again, if you want to improve your health, go after the big things, which is to eat a balanced diet, more fruits and vegetables. Americans aren't eating enough greens, and more fish. You get your omega-3s. The omega-3s from plants aren't converted that well.
But may I ask you directly, you are completely on board as far as the results of this study.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought it was a good study.
Right. And I think that's going to probably bring us to the conclusion here. I want to tell listeners that you can find the interview with Michael Pollan, who's a journalist, about this study on KQED's News Fix blog. Visit kqed.org. And thank you for spending this hour with us. I want to thank our guests, Crystal Smith-Spangler from Stanford, Charles Benberg from the University of Washington, and Bruce Ames from University of California, Berkeley. Thank you all for being with us. Our program is produced by Judy Campbell, Amanda Stupai, and Irene Noguchi. Our senior editor is Dan Zolin. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.